afternoon. Oops. There we go. All of a sudden we had sound and then we didn't have sound. So good afternoon. You are joining We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
And I'm Bob Martin.
And our guest is Dr. Sid.
Dr. Fraser Crane.
Yeah, it is kind of like that, isn't it?
Fasten your seatbelts.
Told Bob, I go, you get to play all sorts of fun music. Bill gets to goof off. Okay, Aaron gets to goof off. It's going to be great. And you know, it was a pure accident that we're having Dr. Sid on the radio. I wound up chatting with him on the phone this week. And now today we find out that the guy in Las Vegas might have had mental illness.
Get out of here.
No.
No.
This just in. Like, are you kidding me? No pressure. Pull that just a little bit closer because it doesn't pick up very well.
There you go.
There we go. Now I can hear you in my ears.
Yeah, I heard that on the news last night.
Bill went nuts.
I wanted to throw a shoe through the TV. It's like, we've waited a week.
It's like, are you kidding me?
And they didn't get the answers they wanted, so he's mentally ill now.
Like a week ago, we didn't know that.
Like, we didn't know that somebody that goes out and kills a bunch of people and then kills himself isn't mentally ill. We're too stupid to figure that out. They got to tell us.
They have to have that on the news. Oh, and that's all they're talking about today, apparently. Yeah, it was on my news feed last night, I thought. Oh, tomorrow's going to be tons of fun, and that wasn't even what we were going to talk about.
What did they diagnose him with? I haven't seen that yet.
Yeah, exactly.
Mental illness.
They didn't say what kind?
No.
Wow.
No,
they're just you know,
he had undiagnosed mental disorders for a long time.
Yeah. I can tell you right now what I think it was. Nonspecific frontal lobe damage. It's the, like I was telling you the other day on the phone, the breaks in your brain that say stop when you feel like killing somebody or hitting somebody, the thing that goes, wait a minute, don't do that, gets smacked, dinged, or knocked out of action for some reason.
Really?
And yeah.
That's an actual thing?
Impulses bubble. Heck yeah. Hmm? Heck yeah. Hmm. Frontal lobe damage takes the brakes off of your brain, knocks your impulse control down, and can, in a variety of ways, be really... really big problem. And that's not to say, you know, there might have been something going on like schizophrenia, personality disorder, you know, narcissistic.
Can you tell any of this if the person's dead?
Do
you have to be able to talk to them? Or can you, like, spy inside their head and see it? Is it a visual thing?
You could probably do a brain assay postmortem to see if there's damage to the frontal lobe.
Huh.
The reason I bring that up, the whole CTE thing in the NFL, chronic traumatic encephalitis. That's a manifestation of that.
Yeah, that's a real thing. That's
when they all become criminals and stuff
same
like that.
Thing,
even
or
though
kill
some
themselves.
Of them are
criminals. Yeah, people that seem to be, you know, stars and well balanced guys and everything, and next thing you know, they're suicidal, and that's due to traumatic brain injury to the frontal lobe. So,
Well, there you go.
Okay.
So the next time you feel like I should
have
had a
V8.
I should have had a
don't
V8. Stop doing that.
Yeah. No, hit yourself in the nose instead.
Yeah, don't do that.
Preferably with an upward direction, right? So let's see. I culled some things out of your resume. Kind of a weird way to do it, to try to figure out. I'm like, I don't know much about him, but I've got to post some stuff. So looks like you were born in Baton Rouge.
Yes, ma'am.
How exciting! I was like, you didn't have an accent. What's up with that?
I went to LSU.
Oh, there you go.
And I ate crawfish.
Married, has six children.
And catfish, a lot of catfish.
Six that we know of.
Six children. And you have an office that's in Reading, and if anybody needs to go there, the address is posted online.
Oh, no.
Along with the phone number. Please call ahead. And you've been in private practice since 1981. So,
wow, yeah. Holy cow, so I'm over 40 now.
You know, from a regular person perspective, that's a lot of crazy people. A lot.
Evaluations alone over 25,000.
Stop it.
No, seriously, and that's not counting private patients. So
that's evaluate because without flipping to it, it's what do you do for the state?
I do disability evals for the state. That is people that may have had a motorcycle accident with a coma, traumatic brain injury, a stroke, people that may have schizophrenia and they're taking their meds and still can't function. So
well, I saw one of them up front earlier, actually.
Yeah.
Did tattoos all over his face. What causes you to do that?
A lot of guys get
colorful tattoos like on your face, literally on your cheeks and your nose and stuff.
A lot of guys have seen parolees coming out of prison or having a lot of facial stuff.
Really?
That signifies different things. So,
His was sort of circusy. It was colorful, very colorful, kind of in a circus sort of motif.
Like the movie It?
Yeah, the there you go. That could have been it.
Creepy.
He was the creepy clown without the shoes. So
a lot of evals, quite a few privates as well. Working with the district attorney's office in a couple of counties, doing assessment for them. A lot of pain evals. For
a lot of what?
Pain, chronic pain evaluations. Evals. Yeah, for intravertebral disc surgeries,
why would you have to have a psychiatric evaluation for pain?
To make sure you know what you're getting into. You know, a lot of people have been on narcotic pain medication a really long time, and they're not thinking clearly. So we're trying to make sure they're aware of risk and complications of surgeries, just to make sure they know what they're getting into. And then classic case I had of a guy that was a bull rider with a back injury and was looking at stem surgery.
I'm sure that hardly ever happens.
Yeah, and he's looking at stem surgery, which knocks the pain down without correcting the problem, and would like to do it a little part-time maybe still. And it's like, no. I don't think our surgeon's going to be okay with that.
Yeah, it's a big NO from your, from all fronts.
So a really wide range of people, a lot of kids with severe ADHD and autism.
I saw you had a huge
number of those.
Period of time where you worked with youth.
Yeah, I still do. I still work. I do a lot of evals for the Department of Social Services for disability for severe ADHD and autism. And there's some cases that can be dramatically improved with proper medication if needed. And, you know, a quick summary is a lot of parents are nervous about giving a child a medication. And if it comes down to a medication preventing a kid from bolting out in front of a car and getting killed, I say do the medication. So my take on that,
given the choices,
the take on that for me, I taught pharmacology too. The take on the medication thing is, number one, if it's a serious risk to the child of injury or serious harm or death, do it. And the other one is when the teacher starts saying, look, this little guy is falling further and further behind, disruption, getting kicked out of school, has to go to another school or whatever, then you have really loud and clear behavior observations saying, look, we don't want to medicate anybody when they're a kid, but, you know, there are times when you need to consider that.
Do you think kids today, you know, you hear over-medicated, you know, everybody wants to medicate their kid. Maybe they don't, but a lot of doctors say, hey, he just needs a little Ritalin to settle him down a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, when I was a kid, I don't think I knew anybody that was medicated.
Mom.
And today it seems like a lot of kids are medicated. What's the answer there?
I think for sure I was a ADHD kid. I know.
No.
I was hyperactive. You know, I was into sports. I lost sweaters. I lost basketballs. I lost footballs. I was late getting home, so I know I had the hyperactive thing going on, and I corralled it enough to get through school and kind of outgrew it by the time I was about 18, which a lot of kids do. By the time they get mid to later teens, they outgrow
kind of figure
it.
Out how to
yeah. –
do they literally outgrow it, or do they learn
well, no, the
how
frontal
to –
lobe, the frontal lobe matures.
Oh.
If you do a PET scan of the brain – an ADHD brain, you'll see it's not dark, but a lot darker color. So there's less metabolic activity there. So with maturity and, with maturity, basically, it's like the sprinklers on that part of their brain come on and it starts working. So the problem is we don't want them to be so freaking far behind or involved in juvenile justice that their path in life is already set up.
Yeah, before it kicks on.
Before it even gets going.
Yeah.
So, I am absolutely not for medicating when not necessary. But there are times, if you look at the statistics, particularly with Adderall, I did a pharmacology talk, and they did a long-term graph of the kid's age and who was intervened with ADHD med and who was not. And, oh, my God, the injury rate is three times as high. The incarceration rate's through the roof.
No kidding.
People in prison, yeah. Because here's what happens. The people with ADHD, one of two things happens. They're impulsive, hyperactive. They get in trouble in school. They end up in the wrong
group. Make bad choices.
Yeah, then
right?
They go to YA. Then they end up in prison. Or here's a fascinating thing that happens. They know they're hyper. They know they're overactive. They want to mellow out, so they take meth. And they get busted for meth, which, believe it or not, is in the right general category of medication to control it.
Because it speeds them up to slow them down?
Exactly. Yeah, the meth on an ADHD brain will slow it down and calm it down.
Wow. So yeah, I think taking, a meth is just going to speed them up more.
No, that for every normal brain it does.
Yeah.
You know, if we were to take meth, except for you, Aaron, if any of us took meth, it would probably speed us up.
Almost Aaron, everything goes. Yeah, yeah, like, I did.
But it's a real irony that these people, and then they get busted for that, then they go to prison, then they get UA, urine screens for it, and they can't do it. So it's kind of a paradox.
Interesting.
There.
Well, as we're walking around in the city streets these days, you know, I don't care what city you live in, I think we're learning a lot more about mental illness than we ever really wanted to know.
Oh,
so seemed like it would be a good time to have you come in and talk to us about this. So we're going to continue our conversation with Dr. Sid. I'm sure we will go all sorts of places because we have no plan.
Yeah.
How's
and
that
I, and
for
I
full
have a
disclosure?
Million questions.
Full disclosure. Yeah. There's no plan.
Because I have this friend who, well, we'll get into that later.
Yeah, I had this dream the other night. It was so cool.
No,
like
no.
All these
this friend.
Trains.
I had a friend who had a dream.
A special friend.
My
oh,
really
my God. Life here at We the People is a lot more fun than usual. WeThePeopleRadio.us. Join us online.
What shall we do about them when they move into your neighborhood? They take over, but good. They want you all body and soul. Then it's just your body. Then they go. What shall we do about them?
I knew Bob was going to have fun with the music today. What a great topic, right? So during the break, we were talking about Obamacare, talk about things that make people crazy.
Yes.
Okay, so your premium this year without it. Oh, yeah, you brought it. I forgot
I'm
about
sorry.
That.
And it was written in such a kind way.
With the form letter?
Yeah, it's really a
dear
taxpayer. It's actually from Anthem, calling to let you know your plan will no longer be available. We have found you a comparable plan. Your estimated
comparable.
Yeah, your estimated payment will be $3,360.
Oh, is that all? $3,000?
But with your subsidy, it should only be $1,941.
Wow.
This is for me, my healthy wife, and I'm healthy too, I think, and my 7-year-old son who's very healthy. This is for a healthy family of three, $1,941 with a subsidy of $1,400. So I'm going, where do we go here?
And we all know the subsidy isn't really a subsidy.
Well, it came back, yeah.
I mean, yeah, and then all of a sudden if they decide that, you know, something changed or whatever, by the way, you get to pay it back.
Yeah.
Surprise!
Yeah, you can make a certain amount of money, but if you go over that apparently one iota, that's what happened with me. You know, that's how we met. It's like, wait a minute. Oh, by the way, we thought you qualified, but you don't. So give us back $18,900.
Yeah, they'll take a check or money order.
Sure, yeah, I'll just
take payments $100 a month with interest, and you pay for it. Oh wait,
and make your quarterly.
Your
great doesn't matter if you're $1 over the threshold; they want the whole $18,000 back.
I'm afraid so. Nice. And then the weird part is, once you pay that, then that's going to change your write-offs for that year. So whatever you can write out for your medical insurance will drop you down to what you can be taxed at. So it's just a giant train wreck, in my opinion.
That's a nice way of putting it.
And we've heard that from
tons of people.
A lot of people that go to do their taxes and at the end of the year, and then all of a sudden they find out that
the subsidy
is killing them.
Yeah, the highest one I've heard was $8,000, so you're going to beat by, you know, 10-9.
Yeah,
you're
way over that.
You are the
high
achiever.
It's quite an incentive to go out and be successful. I mean,
right.
You know,
when somebody calls to be a new patient,
yeah,
I'm really feeling bad. I'm so solid. Oh, my God, Doc, I got to get some help. I'm sorry, if I see you, I will have to pay $18,000.
I can't do it.
It's just unbelievable.
You'll have to deal with your own mental illness today.
Quota.
But I don't think that way. I honestly got it.
No,
can't.
If somebody calls, you know, or you get an eval, I like to work except on the weekend. It's not a put down to you guys, but I don't have to work in the weekend. I'm very happy you could find a job talking to
me. Because you have a soccer problem.
This really isn't work.
He's got a soccer problem. That's
not an obsession.
Just can, you know, Except when I texted in the address for the place today, he reads me a soccer text. I'm like,
no, it's
that,
like,
wasn't,
what a great,
that wasn't me.
It's like, what a great team. I said, I think I got your text. I opened it up. I said, what a great team victory against an undefeated team. We played our little hearts out. We have a lot of kids with attention problems, but we really hung in there. And I thought,
and
that's,
I'm like,
not Aaron.
I'm like, no, it was the address for the studio. Different text. So one of the things I meant to ask you about was the clinical hypnosis part. You started, it looks like the beginning of a lot of your career stuff was in the
Time ago when I was at Emory Pain Control Center doing my my internship back there near Georgia. I think it was in Decatur. But we had a pain clinic, and they were, Dr. Brenna, this little, I think he was from Vienna, little Viennese guy.
Brenna from Vienna. That
buck
makes sense.
Teeth, bald, glasses. He's like, Sid, you must learn hypnosis. We want to try hypnosis. I want you to go. I pay for you to go to learn hypnosis. So I went to this conference, and it's pretty cool what you can do with that. So then we came back, and we had a really dramatic case of an intractable migraine headache lady that the meds wouldn't work on, and we did hypnosis, and bingo bango, it might have receded anyway, but it receded
like at the exact same
minutes.
Time.
Yeah, so it's like, well, that can really work in certain cases. And I got trained with Bill Kroger, who did a first C-section under hypnosis on somebody. So,
like, no pain meds, did a C-section?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. He's done some pretty amazing stuff with that. So,
I don't know a lot about C-section, but I know they saw you open and take a baby out.
Yeah. Like. But there's some. Everything has its limits, and clinical hypnosis has a lot of really cool applications for, especially for pain management, for confidence, concentration. You don't want to go to La La Land and relax if there's something you need to be solving. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Like you use hypnosis a lot to relax and get calm and focus, but you don't just drift in a blissful state of relaxation when you have to pay your mortgage. I mean, there's problem solving involved too, so
sure.
It has
right.
its place.
Does it work
know?
For stuff? I mean, they always are having these. You hear them on the radio, and, mm-hmm. and yeah, I guess you see them on TV sometimes.
Oh, the
quit smoking,
lose
yeah.
weight.
Yeah.
yeah,
does it work for that?
It does. It does work. I'd say,
or
for
should I
probably,
say, could it work for that? Probably
absolutely.
Isn't everybody.
Probably, I would say at least a third of the people it'll work for, and they'll do usually some type of that's a little bit different. The big group things. Like,
oh, is that what they
hypnosis.
Do?
That's a little different than medical/clinical hypnosis.
Huh. That yeah. worked really well
that
for Bill
for
at one
mm-hmm.
point.
Yeah, cool. I was the village people. I was.
He did.
Quite,
he did the village people YMCA dance
mm-hmm. yeah.
in front of a lot of strangers.
Which is really weird because I don't typically like to do things in front of crowds. You have mm-hmm. no inhibitions.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you pretty much – I shouldn't say that because one thing that I think lets people go to that state is they tell you they're not going to have you do something or you wouldn't do something
you would ordinarily do under
that
some
you wouldn't ordinarily
right.
do.
Exactly, and that's absolutely
but
right.
Trust me, I wouldn't ordinarily jump up
but
in front
what,
of a bunch
what
of people
happened
and do
was
the YMCA.
You, yeah, you got in your brain, it's perfectly okay, and it's not only okay, it's expected to do this, and that's what
right.
we call
it. He was super excited about
yeah.
it. You could see, like, they started to play the music,
yeah.
and all of them were like, oh! It's us. Like, they yeah. were super excited. And
yeah,
it was
bizarre.
It was at the fair. And so we were in the equipment business,
mm-hmm.
and the tractor booth was right next to the little Pepsi stage.
Mm-hmm.
And so this lady was the hypnotist all week.
Mm-hmm.
So every time Bill walked over there, he was anywhere near, and she would start talking, all of a sudden, oh, there goes Bill.
I did. I sat down. I was by myself, and she was going on stage, so I sat in the back, and I sat next to a guy, and I was just going to sit there because I could see my booth from where I was sitting, and if somebody came over, I could run over there. So she started talking, and the next thing I know, I open my eyes, and my head, I was sleeping on this guy's shoulder, and
wow.
he was kind of starting to kind of set me up a little bit, and
he's like, buddy, you're leaning on me.
What's the problem, man? I'm just taking a little nap.
Was it a post-hypnotic suggestion?
You'll
get something where every time you hear a bell, you'll fall asleep or something.
No,
like
well,
that.
Every time he heard her voice, it was like whatever she was talking about,
mm-hmm.
he had been, we didn't know he had sleep apnea.
Mm-hmm.
And so he had been really tired.
Mm-hmm.
And so all of a sudden that all happened at the same time. And we had a guy come into the store. I was working in the store. I only went down there in the evenings.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy comes in. He goes, I saw Bill at the fair. I go, oh, yeah. You know, did you go by the booth? He goes, yeah. He goes, He was kind of like Mr. Rogers. He was a little weird. Like, and I go, what are you talking about? He goes, well, he was sitting in a lawn chair with sunglasses on, and he said, hi.
Oh, whoa.
Well, one of the post-hypnotic suggestions they give you is you're going to feel, when you wake up, you're going to feel better than you ever did. You're going to be relaxed. You're going to enjoy the fair. You're going to blah, 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 blah. But one of them was you're going to be relaxed.
Like, feel rested.
Feel rested. And I guess I did. You don't realize it, but
yeah,
he was freaking people out.
Yeah,
I remember. I just brought back something for me. I remember training for my pilot's license, my VFR license. I was really nervous about flying in heights at that point in my life, and I used a hypnotic suggestion. When you're piloting a plane, your mind is perfectly calm, crystal clear, and totally aware. And that's what clicked the second I got into the plane. And it's like no panic, no nothing, calm, clear, and aware. You're not like sleepy headed. You're looking, see what's going on, and that served me really, really well for quite a while, including a situation in which I'm coming back on my first cross country flight, playing it safe, flying over I-5 North at 3,000 feet. You can't get any more safe than that.
Yeah, you're not going to get lost up there.
Whatever happens, and you can land on the freeway. Yeah.
And you can land on the freeway, right?
Harry, bad luck. Two friggin' army guys in a helicopter. Freaking dead on, looking straight down, and I dove right to get out of the way. But then I realized this could be dangerous.
This place is too crowded for me.
There were army people with their stuff. I mean, they have all their detection stuff.
Yeah.
And it's like
doing arminess, and they don't care what you're doing.
Yeah, there's all this space in the freaking sky. What the heck? What are the odds of me running into an Army helicopter? But anyway.
And so then you didn't fly anymore?
No, I did. I flew a little bit more. And then the question arose, where do I have to fly in a single-engine airplane? That, I'm full with my practice. So what do I do? Do I fly to Santa Rosa one day a week and back, or do I just work full-time here? So I've been very blessed to have, good business here.
Right.
So I kind of came up. And plus trying to find what is the hospital in Bernie? Is it Mayor's, is it?
Yes, Mayor's Memorial.
Mayor's Hospital, yes. I get a gig there. I'm supposed to maybe look at doing a morning week there, doing evals or something.
You're like, I could fly
have
up there.
Have you ever tried to find the freaking airport?
I know. It's the size of the table we're sitting around.
It's not even that big. No. True. I'm saying, like, in reality, it's an airport.
Right.
But when you're at 5,000 feet,
it
looks like a freaking thimble.
I know.
Yeah. So, like, I'm flying,
surrounded by mountains, yeah.
Yeah, I'm flying around the mountains.
I can't fit.
Though,
I don't think I can do it.
No, I never found it.
Oh, you literally
couldn't
see it.
I just went back to Reading. No. It's like I'm not good at that stuff,
I'm not either. So,
I'm not good at this stuff.
I landed in Truckee, but when you're way up in the air,
that's true.
I think of an airport as like, wow, here's this big old thing.
Flashing
lights and, arrows.
Yeah.
And
at nighttime when the stuff's on, you can see it a lot better. But when you're in the mountains and you're looking down at a small airfield, it is not as big as you think.
No, it's totally – that perspective is something – you don't get anywhere else.
Yeah.
And I think anybody that hasn't spent much time in a small plane. It doesn't look the same. It is hard to identify. You can fly right over an area you grew up in.
Right.
And not be able to identify what you're looking at. You know it's the town, right, but you can't really see it from that perspective.
I got to tell you guys one really quick story. When I was getting my VFR, I did my cross-country flight. It involved that guy, the helicopter guys. So it involved those guys. It involved flying over to Sonoma. It starts to rain at like 4,000 feet. I've never been up in an airplane when it's raining. So I'm thinking, crap, what the hell do I do?
Yeah, is this bad?
Yeah. Are there some like windshield wipers? What? What do you do? So they have an emergency frequency, right? So I'm like, I said, look, I hate to bother you guys, but I'm not far from your airport. Number one, I don't see it. Number two, it's like raining. And I go, well, can you see? And I go, well, yeah, it's blowing off the windshield. Well, then you should be okay. I go, well, thank you. And
I don't feel any better.
And then when they stop laughing.
You can tell he's laughing. He goes, are you on your first cross country? And I go, yeah. I'm sorry to bother you, but one other quick thing. I know I'm close to your airport, but I don't see it. And he goes, okay, turn on your – I think my transponder was on. Said, okay, I got you. I remember the number of the plane was
8. He's like, you're right above it.
8146 Alpha. So he goes, yeah, we have a visual on you. He said, look to your left and down. It's right in front of you. So,
see, those are the days it's fun to be an air traffic controller.
So I landed. All that's fine. I take off again. Then I come back. So I got the the Army guys who almost hit me, it starts raining, and then I couldn't find Sonoma. And then when I'm finally coming back to Redding, I'm coming in. I caught a wind shear, and a guy was landing upwind. A guy's coming in the wrong way.
Right.
So I catch a gust. The guy's coming in the wrong way. I did a go-round and pulled out to the right, and then I came back around and landed. And so my instructor, Lee Agnew, God bless her, she's an awesome instructor. I called her when it was all over. I'm sitting there with a big old glass of whiskey and ice going, Lee, oh, my God, you got to hear what happened. You got to hear what happened.
You're not going to believe it.
You're not going to believe this.
This has never happened to anybody ever before.
Yeah, and she goes, she listened to it. I mean, I said the Army helicopter almost hit me. I said, I couldn't find the airport. It started raining. You never told me what to do if it rains. There are no windshield wipers on these planes. Yeah, so, you know, you didn't tell me you could fly in the rain. And then I came back around. I got a wind. I had to go around. A guy's landing upwind. And she said, well, what did you do? And I said, well, I dodged the two other planes and did a go around on that. And I found the airport and landed. She goes, well, very good. You did very well. And she said, you know, Dr. Cormier, I have to tell you, you had more things happen on your first flight than most people have in a lifetime.
Oh, man.
And then she goes, if you tell your, in a real serious voice, if you tell your friends about this, no one is going to want to fly with you.
Oh, yeah, you know what? That's the point.
So you got to keep that to yourself.
Yeah, keep that to yourself.
I haven't told anybody that in a
long time. Nobody will know.
No one will hear it today either. No one will know. All right. We have to have a short celebration of capitalism here. Are we good with that? Good. So you are listening to We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us, where we have all sorts of information about Dr. Sid. And seriously, it's extensive. When we come back, we're going to talk about his book. You'll never believe what it's called. This is a veritable, just like a candy store for Bob. So the name of the book, before we get distracted and talk about something else. So this is the first book you did, the Am I Normal?
Right. No. Life Guide.
No, Life Guide was the first one. Okay, so the one, Life Guide, Keys to Emotional Strength. And that was, 92. And then the Am I, I'm going to post the link to the Am I Normal book.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you wound up on Oprah Winfrey and all sorts of stuff. Okay, why'd you write the book?
I wrote Life Guide to try to help people, give like kind of like stuff I'd show people in counseling in a book form, everything I knew to try to help them deal with stresses in life, problems or whatever, past traumas, difficulties, cognitive issues. So I kind of put all the stuff I do in a book, including what I was talking to you about, situational engineering, sphere of influence, the little voice in your head, what you say to yourself. So there are a lot of little books in the book there. But the first chapter was called Am I Normal, which a publicist heard that, called me and said, hey, you have a book here in and of itself. So Carolyn Graf called me and said, we'll offer you a publishing deal for trade paperback and publicize it a lot if you write the book. So I did, and the next thing you know, Life Guide kind of got way overshadowed by Am I Normal? I'm doing all these radio and TV talk shows and around 93 on that one. So,
oh, was that the one that got you on Oprah?
Oprah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Because she did a lot. She did book reviews almost every show, right?
Yep. I was right before her kind of, before it really took off. Mm-hmm. And, oh, my God, I'm not bitter. I want you to know I'm not bitter.
Sure.
Because I've had a great
life.
I can tell. Yeah.
But I was in Dr. Bagley, the foot doctor's office. I'd been playing soccer and windsurfing, and I got my toenail crushed.
Oh.
So I'm in his office getting a nail bed removal. So I get a call from Alice McGee from the Oprah show asking for a revisit, you know, get back on and talk about your book and be with a panel on us and all. So I said, I can't right now. I'm in surgery, but, you know, I'll let you know or whatever. This is so, it doesn't piss me off. It doesn't at all, and I'm not angry. But Dr. Phil popped into the panel.
Ah.
First time back yonder, you know, he got involved, and it was
It was all Dr. Phil.
And he sucked all the air.
Past. Yeah,
sucked all the air out of the room while you were dealing with your toe.
I was dealing with my freaking toe and I didn't go back on. It's like I should have just said cut the toe off. You know, put a bandage on it, caught me on the flight, you know. But
Dr. Phil was the next Army helicopter.
He ended up getting involved as a guest due to being selecting witnesses on juries.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
he was consulting for jury selection.
Right.
Oh.
So it's kind of weird. He came from really different places, and I was working with actual.
Well, that's really how he kind of got his own deal going. As a result of.
I didn't know that.
It's kind of, and it's not. Yeah. It's not that I was working with actual real patients, and not jury selection. And I'm not bitter or angry. And I'm not saying I could do a better job.
I'll have that look out for you.
Couldn't find the airport. Darn it. Land the plane.
Oh, God. Okay, all right.
Our dog just had his toenail torn off, so, you know, actually, when you say that, we're both like, because it looks bad.
I had for pain a toe injury. It's one of the worst. I remember I had a glass of white Zen and a Percocet that night.
It seems like there's probably rules about that.
Stephen Lear's Stephen King's The Langoliers.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I was... Oh, my God.
I'm never flying again.
I'm never doing it. The Langoliers are coming.
Look what's in my brain on Percocet.
I totally remember that. Pinchot, or whatever his name was the guy in the movie. Yeah, and the Langoliers were coming.
And then you figure out later, they say on the little bottle, do not mix with alcohol.
Sure.
Which
is
a bottle.
Read.
You just read the part of how many you're supposed to take. I don't worry about the rest of it.
Isn't it implied? It comes in a bottle and it looks like medication. It's implied you don't drink things. No equipment, no booze.
No, the toe thing is very painful. I remember I smashed my toe when we moved a couple years ago. Oh, we did a yard sale and I dropped a chair or something on my big toe. Smashed it. Oh, my gosh.
It was Don's big chair. That big.
Yeah.
It throbs.
Turned it all
black. Like crazy.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I was limping around for 2 weeks. Yeah. It took over a year for that toenail to grow back.
So.
Yeah, it was awful.
Okay, so go back on the book thing. Okay, so in the land of books.
It's all over the place today, aren't we?
I know. I told Bill, it's going to be like a car careening out of control.
It's her.
You know, which
it's
is.
Not me.
Which
I
is,
can focus.
It's not me. Oh, sure. No, I was thinking about the book thing. Okay, so once you sit down and write a book, it's kind of like, do you sort of mentally check it off your list of things that you've done? Like, there are people who just, they do it once, and they just write books from there on out.
Yeah, what happened was, it was like, you know, writing nonfiction is what I do, and it's like I had an idea, what can I get across to people? I talked to Dr. Joyner, he was my editor. And I said, yeah, I want to get out to people everything I do. I got some good ideas, you know, I think, and a lot's already been done, but I'm putting it all into one place. So I want to get that out there for people and give examples of it. So I did the proposal, which is a couple of chapters and an outline in competitive books and my bio. And he said, yeah, you know, McGraw-Hill will take it. We'll take it on as a project. So you don't do the whole book.
You don't write the book and then try to get somebody to print it.
You do, not normally. you do a proposal summary, competitive books, your bio, who your primary, secondary, and tertiary market are, and then you and if they like it, they'll usually give you a cash advance, and then you write the rest in whatever time.
Yeah, and then, that makes sense.
Am I Normal was the first chapter life guide, so it was like, so people were saying, "Well, this is." I said, "Yeah, I hear this question a lot. Am I normal? You know, I thought this. Is that normal?" I said, "Yeah, let's just do a psych eval in a book. We'll just do what I do for my evaluations and check each category, like bipolar, schizophrenia, ADHD, depression, you know, panic, all those things." So I have like 10 or 12 chapters. So that book was purely designed to reassure people. Like, if you got this problem, here's what you can do, but here's the boxes you have to check
in order to be broken.
Yeah. To have the disorder, and it's really clear out of DSM-4 and now 5. There's a certain number of criteria you have to have, or you don't meet the standard for it. So it was designed to, you know, to reassure people, and then a lot of people wanted to, you know, get that on talk shows and everything. So
what's the most frequent symptom people come in with and want to know if they're normal? I mean, is it voices?
Not at all. That's really, to be honest with you, schizophrenia is exceptionally rare.
Right, right.
I mean,
what would be the most common?
Most common would probably be depression, and then
The
anxiety disorders. From what I see, I'm seeing people that may be disabled, so a lot of what I see is bipolar.
Mm-hmm.
And
what is that anyway?
Bipolar.
We hear it a lot.
Yes,
but what is
fluctuation in mood swings from extremely low to agitated and extremely high. It's a little tricky because bipolar is like a prolonged roller coaster down and high with different variations. You can have rapid cycling up and down. You can have down for years and then up for months in a row.
Oh, wow.
So
I thought it was more, you know, up one day, down the next day,
rapid
up one
cycling
day.
One particular
is,
type.
Is that more
but
common?
But that's rapid cycling compared to more standard bipolar is a little more rare. Mm-hmm. But you can get it hourly. You can get people during the day.
Oh, God, that's
exciting
confusing
for their family.
And what it is it's no real precipitating event. It isn't like you won the lottery or you lost your job or your husband.
Oh, nothing sets it off.
It's endogenous. It's endogenous mood swings for no apparent reason, but it's got to have life-damaging consequences.
So meaning you can't hold down a job. Nobody wants to.
Yeah, I mean, there are people that Churchill, I believe Roosevelt as well, some really famous people have had bipolar.
Really?
And done a lot with it. Yeah, so during the manic phases, the guy that wrote the guy that created the test that I wrote Am I Normal off of, the diagnostic interview, he was bipolar. He climbed Mount Everest, and he said it. I went to his seminar. He said, yeah, I'm definitely bipolar. You can accomplish a lot in a manic phase, and here's all the stuff I've done. So that's a common one, but you got to have life-damaging consequences to it in order for it to be a problem. So if you're perfectly dialed in as, say, bipolar type 2, you know, you have ups and downs, but it doesn't create any big problems in your life, and you produce a lot.
Well, that's probably what was wrong with my ex-wife. She was fine during the day when I wasn't there. When I came home, she went off the bed. So she's probably bipolar.
That's
it wasn't me.
That's a precipitating event.
It's not me. It's her.
Fish oil. No, it's true. Fish oil. Everybody listen carefully. Three times the normal dose of fish or krill. Tremendous mood stabilizer.
Really? Wow.
Scientific fact. Yep.
Wow.
Absolutely.
I had no idea.
Absolutely.
I better stop calling those Prius cars krill then.
Yeah. I don't know. Every time I try to drink, my mother used to make us drink fish oil when we were children. And ever
that was
since
cod liver
then,
oil.
Yeah.
I guess that counts. Cod is a fish.
It's weird because that came out, over 10 years
fish
ago.
Oil?
And yeah, fish fit, but it's got to be 300% of the normal dose. You're three times the amount.
Wow.
So fish oil usually comes in
about
two caps, it would be six.
So what about the mint-flavored fish oil? That was exceptionally tasteful. I really liked that.
Hold on. Let's see if we have a sponsor that might be telling us about that.
And when we come back, I'll tell you what my dad used to say about fish oil.
But there's
a
book called The Omega Miracle that came out, I think it was in
and
the
it was
90s.
Real?
And no, it was just the Omega-3 thing.
Right,
yeah,
right.
It was,
but I mean, it was a miracle. It was a good thing.
Yeah, it was rated as great for your heart and your joints and your overall health. It was tremendous. And then I believe it was in the 90s now that they came out with the studies. They actually took bipolar people, gave them three times the normal amount of omega-3, and they found, whoa, this works as good as Depakote. you know, which is a really powerful mood stabilizer with some big side effects.
Well, and then they just found out,
I think it was 2 or 3 years ago that I read about it in a conference, that krill does the same thing. So
I mean, you could actually
see, I couldn't take krill. It. My cholesterol went through the roof when I started doing fish oil on a regular basis.
We'll have Bill analyzed during the break here.
I need some special
We have 2 minutes
help.
To find out what's wrong
excuses,
with
excuses, Bill.
What's wrong
just
with Bill?
Drink the fish oil.
We'll be right back. You're listening to We the People. Join us online. WeThePeopleRadio.us.
I love fish.
I thought fish oil was supposed to help your cholesterol.
Yeah, not me.
That's good cholesterol.
Not Bill.
You're weird.
I figured out how to rig the test, so I didn't.
Crazy. I'm crazy for feeling so lonely. I'm crazy. Crazy for feeling.
Yes or no question. Do you hear the voices or not?
That's a chapter in life. Little voice inside your head.
Really?
That's a chapter.
Well, there's the nice little voice inside your head that tells you to bring an umbrella and you ignore it and then you realize that you're stupid.
Yeah, I got a question. What about people that talk in their sleep? What's that all about?
Yeah. And is singing a problem?
I don't know, but I had this really cool dream two nights ago I could tell you about. I haven't figured
it out. I sang
Camp
Town Races to Bill one night when I was sleeping.
Yeah.
To be honest with you, talking
through a Western phase,
I'm a little unclear on that one. I don't know. I know people do it, and I know there's some somnambulism.
Oh, my brother would do it. I mean, he'd sleepwalk, talking to sleep. I mean, he was very active when he was asleep. And, of course, we tormented him a lot when he was a child, but he still.
That's a whole different therapy.
Yeah. He could carry on a conversation
a
in his sleep. And then a lot of times you wouldn't know he was asleep until he said something totally obscure, and then it's like, you're asleep, go back to bed, and then go back to bed.
I am, of my domain of knowledge, you happen to stumble upon the one thing I've never learned, so
good
thank
job,
you
Bill.
Very much.
There you go.
I really
Boom.
Appreciate that.
Well, we saw the
nice job
that
of exposing him, Bill.
He's a hack!
It took an hour. They finally broke
took
me down.
He snapped him right before the commercial break.
Oh, boy.
Well, we read that you've been in Mensa. Okay, so I was reading, Bill, some of your stuff, right? So you were in Mensa in 1973. Bill's like, how do you join Mensa? I'm like, oh, if you have to ask. You know? So I thought, okay, Google, I'll do a little search. So I'm like, how do you join Mensa? So it had a little thing. Hey, you could take a quiz online. So I click the thing, and it comes up to a dead page. I'm like, this is the test. The test is, can you get to the actual link? So actually, I found a workaround, and I got to the link, and it didn't say you won or anything. Mm-hmm. It didn't, didn't give me
any. You still had to take the test.
You still had to take the test. You still couldn't get there from here, but we laughed. It's like, all right.
The Mensa people, when I got to Mensa, I was in New York at New School in Manhattan, and it's a real academically powerful place. And with all due respect, I'm sure there are great people in Mensa and everything, but the people I met in it were extremely unusual to be
No. Yeah.
Very polite.
I knew somebody who was Mensa, and they couldn't socially communicate.
One of the things we did that I thought was really kind of cool, I played a game of chess against a guy in our heads.
Oh.
You have to remember every piece, every position.
Yeah,
that's pretty
difficult.
Cool. And you call each other if you don't get it right, if you don't remember everything and what you're doing. So that was...
Okay, that would be hard.
Yeah, that's...
It's very hard.
Yeah.
But if it...
Kind of fun, though.
It is, because you're checking each other and agreeing on what you're doing and then making your moves.
Yeah, you'd have to find somebody in Mensa to do that with you, because I would imagine the normal circle.
Then I realized, to be honest with you, I realized the people that I was talking to have huge brains that are totally being freaking wasted. It's just unbelievable.
They're looking at all this random weird stuff.
Random weird stuff, obsessions about things, tremendous knowledge base in certain areas that I won't get into because they're a little bit weird in and of themselves. But it's like, hey, if you're blessed with a big brain, put it to use making the world a better place, you know?
Right.
Yeah,
so.
Wow. It's like having a sports car, but it's in the garage all the time.
I let my membership lapse and subsequently took a few really hard falls skiing. So I don't know. I'm not sure I'd still pass.
We laughed so hard, though. How do you get into Mensa? Like, Yeah, so you did a whole bunch of stuff, and I'm really curious when we come back, okay? I realize this seems backwards because we're going to do it in the middle of the show, but I'm curious how you got involved in what made you think as a young person, hey, I should become a clinical psychologist.
Oh, that's a good story.
I have a nephew. You remind me a lot of Travis.
Yeah.
Oh.
And
is he still in prison?
He's at San Diego State, and I think he's going to...
That's where my daughter went.
I think he's going to get a degree in psychology, and I'm like, oh my gosh, he's going to be just like you.
Cool.
Kind of made me chuckle, so I need to get a window into his future. Yeah. We'll be right back. You are listening to We the People. Join us on wethepeopleradio.us. Good afternoon. You're joined in the second hour of We the People Radio. We had a really good time the first hour, so if you missed it, we hope you listened to the archive because it's worth it. So, I should do a little housekeeping that I didn't do in the first half because I actually do know what we're doing the next couple of weeks. Believe it or not, Bob. This
you?
Just in. I know. I've somehow been hijacked by someone else. But things kind of came together, you know. Our good friend Stephen Manfredi back there in Virginia, he has Ryan Morrow from the Clarion Project who will be with us next week. He did a really good analysis of President Trump's UN speech and how most of these speeches don't talk about the Islamist ideology, and this speech really did. We also have another guy in the first hour that I don't have confirmed yet, but next week will be two different people. Interesting. We'll get back to wider national politics. The week after, we have a guest host, and that'll be Vince Stevenson. So it's his show to put together, but I believe it'll be about the Reading City Council recall and some stuff connected to that, so you don't want to miss that either. That's the 22nd. So next couple of weeks will be kind of fun. And if you have ideas or people you'd like for us to have on, you can reach us on the webpage at wethepeopleradio.us, and our emails and our phone numbers and all that good stuff are there. And that is mostly all. Yeah. All the housekeeping.
Yeah.
Okay, so I guess we should identify the voices. So I'm Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cunliffe.
And I'm Bob Martin.
And all the music comes from Bob Martin, which is why you only hear his voice once and then there's no voice after that. Yeah, that's all the music. And our guest is Dr. Sid Cormier. Say hi, Dr. Sid.
I'm Dr. Fraser Cormier. And I'm listening.
And I'm listening. And analyzing. More importantly, you're analyzing, right?
Right. On Sunday? Nope.
Yeah, not on Sunday. That's a day off. Well, we had this conversation last week, and as we were chatting on the phone, I thought, you know, this would make a great radio program because, honestly, I think a lot of people are trying to figure out if they're losing it. It just seems like the whole world has gone mental. So I think people are wondering, is it the world going mental? Am I going mental? Am I part of it? Am I outside the loop, inside the loop? Mm-hmm. How do I fit in the puzzle? And how do I make it stop? I think a lot of people would like some of the madness to stop. I don't think that's happening anytime soon, though. What would be your considered opinion as a professional in the mental health field?
Well, a lot, so much is changing compared to our past history. You know, in terms of my perspective, I was around before social media, and now there is social media before...
Yeah.
Internet knowledge and that sort of thing. So there's a tremendous overwhelm of information. And taking things at face value, if it's posted, it must be true.
Yeah.
And there's stuff all over the place. There's fictitious audiences in people's head regarding their Facebook or Twitter followings or whatever.
Yeah, that's a good point. What about social media? Social media seems like plays such a huge role.
Yeah,
and people's decision making anymore.
So if you're kind of off the bubble to start with,
yeah,
you throw that into the mix.
If you're not aware of what's going on, and we got to get new kind of parameters in terms of what's what we call the word normal, but what's not pathological. I mean, like video gaming, like my son. I mean, he's limited on how much time he can spend. When his friends come over, they're really active little guys. They play soccer and all that stuff. But if they get the chance to get on a tablet, that's what they're going to be doing. It's scary. So, you know, or playing Skyrim or whatever game little kids play on video games, it's captivating. So, you know, it's there's a lot changing that wasn't there. This is going to date me, but I remembered LSU when Pong came out.
Oh, the first game. It dates all of us.
Yeah.
We're all of that era.
Wow, you know, this is cool. And then you think about what's happening now.
I mean, you think about the sound. It just had one sound.
And now you have fictitious characters that you're creating and getting points for and that sort of thing.
And you get to make your own.
Yeah,
I mean, it isn't even that, like Monopoly where you pick the shoe or you pick I mean, you literally get to craft them and kind of put yourself. So you're even more invested.
Yeah, so there seems to be a huge,
it is kind of weird.
A huge online life and a gigantic vicarious life people live. Through others and media and that sort of thing that I don't really think we've got a grip on it yet. Psychology. I don't think we fully know what's going on in terms of making recommendations. Mm-hmm. Like common sense is, okay, you know, if you're gonna play your tablet game for a half hour, you're gonna read for at least a half hour, if not an hour, and you can do exercise for a half hour or more. So, you know, that's our rule, you know, with our kid, balance it out, you know, make sense. But people that get left alone, who knows? You know, who knows what's
so
going on?
So how does that play, like, with folks that you see in your practice? What's the adverse effect of technology that you see? Maybe how's that? Like, do you tell some people just like, okay, you got to put the technology away?
Got to unplug.
Yeah. I remember a case I had. A guy was obsessed with an online game 20 hours a day and met somebody and was something. I don't know if it was Alaska or wherever, but there was
in real life or on the online game?
In the online game, they met the person in the online game. There's an obsession. It goes on. We're talking 18 to 20 hours a day. The guy's trying to get on disability. And, he was absolutely obsessed. But, I mean, like, wait a minute. What does that mean? Why not go apply for a job and then do this on your own time? But I don't know.
Is that how it turned out?
He moved to go live with the person. So, you know,
he met in an online game?
Yeah, that he met in an online game. But it wasn't even really meeting the person moving. The problem was the duration of hours
right.
for a 24-hour cycle of doing it.
That's borderline brainwashed
right
there.
It was 18 to 20. Severe OCD, you know, in that case, which is a little bit rare. But the whole issue of how much of your life do you build around Facebook, Twitter, media following, and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people I talk to, that's their main hobby, is Facebooking and Twitter.
Really? Yeah,
that's what they spend their time doing. Yeah. So, I bet you if you checked around, you would find a lot of people that is kind of their hobby and what they do versus, say, trail bike riding or going for hikes or being outside or whatever.
Yeah, so what is the damage there? I mean, some people like to hike, some people like to fish, some people like to go online. And I mean, is there really anything bad about having this online presence, or is it just the amount of time you spend?
I think it's from the book Am I Normal? The idea in that book was, and it's based on the actual criteria of a psychiatric disorder, if it doesn't interfere with your health, your family, your job, or your social relationships, then it's probably not a disorder.
Mm-hmm. That's like the definition of alcoholism.
Yeah,
if it affects your life, and the people in it, and
if you can't hold a job because of it, it's hurting your liver or your health or whatever.
Yeah,
right.
You know, it's got to have something that's impacting your life in a bad way. So then you can get into, in theory, you could be really screwed up and not have a disorder. You could have bizarre obsessions and whatever else, and as long as you hold it together and don't have problems with your health, your family, your job, or your friends, then that's not really life-damaging consequences.
But then again, the not to cap on the pharmaceutical industry, but it seems like everything now is a disease. Everything now has to be treated with a drug.
Yeah.
And then they advertise on the television and on the radio, all these new drugs.
Yeah.
Like,
and
you
the
know,
side effects.
And the side effects.
and
what
the side
is up
effects.
With that? It's going to make you poop your pants
deal,
involuntarily. It's like, really?
You know, how many?
Who wants to take that?
How many people actually watch those and then, oh, my God, I got to go to my doctor and ask him about this drug. I think I need this drug. You used to see that kind of stuff on television. And now it's like they're asking people to diagnose themselves to go in and talk to their doctor about taking this new drug.
Right.
What's up with that?
Oh, God.
Do you ever have people, when they come in, they've been doing that so much that you're like, okay, look, you got to back out of this and this and this? Or do they have to go back to their MD? How does that go when you're...
Since I was a professor of pharmacology, I don't know of any, honestly, any MD in town I've ever worked with or contacted that doesn't respect what I recommend. Mm-hmm. So they know
that's
my
handy.
Wheelhouse. Yeah, it's
yeah,
cool. So
that's really handy.
I'm not on the hook if something goes wrong.
Yeah, right.
I can say, hey, if it's appropriate, let's try Cymbalta's a really good one, or duloxetine.
Well, do those commercials actually influence people to go in and talk to their doctor about what they think is wrong
with
them?
You know, the people I see, I don't hear quite as much of that. The people I see, a lot of them have kind of given up. The big problem with them is treatment noncompliance. Mm-hmm. There could be something that could help them that they're not doing. Huge problem with prescription opioid dependence. That is enormously a big problem. And most people have trouble pulling out of that on their own. I had a person on Friday that did, a pain patient. But a lot of people really, and it's just a vicious cycle. The benefits you get over time wears down, then you got to take something else, and over time it wears down, and then you got side effects building up. So, the opioid thing is a really tough one with a prescription. In other words, you're saying, okay, you got a real problem here, take the pain medication, and you know ahead of time they're going to get dependent, and you know there are going to be side effects, but we don't have anything, you know, to some extent we don't have anything else to do. That's where stuff like spinal cord stimulator comes in, or disc replacement surgeries or stuff like that. But the other question of, like, taking a medication for a psychiatric problem, the whole class of benzodiazepines or sedatives addresses that issue, because it's a kind of immediate feel-good, relaxed pill that you take for stress or anxiety, and if you become dependent on that. By the way, the time frame on usage is 6 weeks on Ativan, Librium, or Valium.
What do you mean, the time
Xanax
frame?
That's how long you're supposed to use it for. They're not
you mean the maximum use time?
Yeah, mm-hmm. The time frame on those is 4 to 6 weeks.
And that's to treat what?
That's to treat anxiety.
Okay.
You know,
you only take the thing for 6 weeks to try to...
You're not supposed to,
otherwise
because it's so dependency-producing.
Oh, I had no idea.
Yeah, and I actually had a lady that was from a previous pain clinic I worked with, dependent on Xanax, went to Denver and went off of it for, I think, 2 days and had a seizure. So the pain doctor was treating chronic pain with Xanax. Real bad idea there, by the way. So
what is Xanax supposed to do?
Xanax, Librium, Valium.
That's all anxiety.
They're all sedatives, big time.
Oh.
Yeah, and you get an effect within 20 to 30 minutes.
So why would she have a stroke by taking by coming off of it?
She was dependent on it, and when you come off some medications, you can have
your body freaks out.
Yeah, I knew a guy who we had no idea, but he was a salesman for a company that used to call on us, and he did a lot of cocaine, and nobody knew. Mm-hmm. And he did it. Well, he finally realized he had a problem, and he went to a clinic or whatever and said, hey, I want to get off of this. They started weaning him off it, and he died.
Wow. Yeah.
From coming off of it. So I guess,
We were at, when I was psychologist for New Beginnings Drug and Alcohol Dual Diagnosis Center here in Reading for several years, we had a cocktail of Klonopin and several other medications that you take every hour or two. To step you down,
yeah. So you don't go through.
Especially
the
alcohol, you can die in DTs from alcohol easily.
Oh, that's violent. Yeah.
So we closely watching these people and stepping them down with a minor sedative mixed with some other stuff. And Dr. Boyer, great guy. He was the medical director at that point, and he had a really great skill at tapering people off. But some medications are medications that can be abused, and others aren't. The abused medications, primarily the opioids and the sedatives. That would be in the category of opioids being a big one is Norco, real common, Norco, Percodan, all like oxymorphine. It's a new one. Morphine, oxycodone.
Yeah.
So I had a patient come in and go like, I said, what are you taking? And I go, well, I'm taking oxymorphone. And I go, whoa, let me guess. I'm not quite familiar with that one because I don't hear it much, but combination of oxycodone and morphine, it's like, yeah, boy, that must really get you.
Holy cow.
Get you pain-free. But so there's that category. And then
I think I saw that person driving on the freeway the other day.
The sedatives are, they're potentially drugs of abuse, so you really got to, keep an eye on it. Then the medication that are really indicated, we want to fix everything we can with behavior and thoughts, okay? If you can do it yourself, we'd way rather do it that way.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a long-term solution.
The three big categories that are exceptions to that or ADHD, bipolar, and schizophrenia.
That you can't just fix by those willing yourself to be, right.
Yeah, biological. Right. ADHD, tremendously responsive to ADHD meds when appropriate. Bipolar, like I said,
omega 3 times 3.
And people that are afraid of fish, we do have therapies to help them overcome their fear of fish. No, if you're allergic, I'm sorry.
Finphobia. Yeah.
But,
oh, well, that's a good point. Does flaxseed oil work just as well?
As far as I know, it doesn't. It's just yeah, it's kind of that comes up because flaxseed oil is good for you.
Well, it's an alternative omega-3 source for people that are allergic to fish.
I don't know. No. I just know the last I heard we were checking into all the different things that work.
No kidding.
There's a pharmacology conference I go to cover OTC products and what works and what doesn't. By the way, SAMe is very effective.
That's over the counter.
Yeah, OTC is over the counter. S-N-acetylmethionine is really effective for depression, and it helps your joints. There's no doubt about it. The problem is you have to take about 1,200 milligrams a day, so that is, 8 pills a day?
Wow.
You can buy that at Costco fairly cheap, and you take it on an empty stomach, and it actually works. So that helps with depression and your joints. So the St. John's wort works, too. It makes people photosensitive, however. So they're different products.
I mean, I get photosensitive is light, so they have to wear sunglasses all the time?
No, they'd be more sensitive to light and all the problems that come with being in direct sunlight.
Oh.
So that's not really in favor as much. But the bipolar thing is really, it's a tricky one because if you have a manic episode and you go off the wall and get hospitalized or arrested, you know, that's a big deal.
That can
lose your job. And,
yeah, I was going to say, that could jam you up with work and things.
A lot of people that are bipolar, and the problem is a lot of the medications have major side effects. Lithium, you have to get blood tests on lithium and Depakote. The new one, Latuda, we've seen some what we call extrapyramidal symptoms with that, where people are drooling and their faces dropping. And
whoops.
Some
whoops.
Of it's irreversible.
Drooling's a problem.
That's not good.
Yeah, it can be. Some of the damage can be irreversible.
Uh-oh. We have to take a really quick break.
Yeah.
Darn it.
Bob's over there bulldogging.
He gave me the high sign a little
He's
while ago.
He's pouting because he can't take flaxseed oil.
Nice try,
all right, Bob's
Bob.
Therapy session will be during the break here for just 2 minutes. Normally we would celebrate capitalism, but now we're going to have treatment for Bob. And then we'll come back with Dr. Sid. You are listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. That ended that. Yeah. Very unceremonious.
Very unceremonious. Well, it's probably a good thing.
Apparently she didn't have time for the pain.
I was getting ready to cry.
Anybody cries, you get extra points, don't you? Dr. Sid made Bill cry.
Sunday afternoon, a beautiful day. Lighten up, guys. Come on.
We're mental. So, okay. when people come in for a talk about the evaluations that you do for the state.
Oh yeah,
because those of us who don't deal with this at all, mm-hmm. and I think people look around and go, "What the heck is everyone in the whole universe on disability?" And can you just get it for anything?
No, absolutely. First of all, I tell you what they call us. We're called consultative examiners, right?
Okay.
So. But
sounds
what
legit.
I feel better about going in and talking to you.
Then what they call us is on the invoice vendor. Peanuts, popcorn, Cokes, Diet Cokes, vendor.
It is a circus.
Hey, and I call.
They got rid of the circus. Sorry, that's over.
Happy, their director.
Site order a lithium.
Why do you guys call us vendors? What the heck? We're freaking PhDs. Come on, show some love.
I'm not a vendor.
But what the deal
it's
is?
The tellboy,
if you have a condition that's going to keep you out of action for at least 1 year, you should apply for disability. And there's a medical grounds like a badly shattered leg or something. And the doctor goes, look, you're going to need a lot of rehab. It's going to take a while to get over this. And then there's a psych grounds, which could be a motorcycle accident, a stroke, something like that. Or here's a really big one. If you have people that are really trying and doing everything they're supposed to do, a classic example is bipolars I've seen. They're doing everything they can do. They're taking their medication. They're seeing the psychiatrist. They try to return to work. A year and a half, 2-3 years later, they break down again. Even though they're doing everything right, then they would reapply to get back on. But the idea is, do you have a condition that prevents you from doing an SRT? You guys know what SRT
is? No.
A
simple
repetitive task?
Task like your jobs.
Like,
yeah.
Yes.
Oh God.
Yes.
Like you
I
go.
What did you do? Like
I am normal.
No, it's.
He hasn't even read the book. Look at that.
It's kind of
simple repetitive task. Okay, so
could you work at a call center redirecting calls? Could you do that? Could you on the medical side? Could you push a mop in the mall by yourself at night? Because some people, believe it or not, hating people is not a disabling condition, or not liking people. I hear that a lot.
Really?
Just because you hate people or don't like people, that doesn't mean you're
disabled. Like they don't want to work around people?
Exactly. Or? And that's okay. You can have jobs when you're not working around people.
That's true.
Absolutely. And I try to explain that
now,
to
does
people.
PTSD fit into this whole thing?
It can. It's one of the disorders that, in my opinion, is really, really treatable. But, yeah, that can fall in if you're frequently having nightmares or flashbacks regarding a trauma while you're working in a call center.
Or what about the people who kind of wig out if they get around very many people, that kind of thing?
Social phobia or agoraphobia. Yeah, that can occur too.
But they could find it. Theoretically, they could do a job.
And that's where it gets really tricky because one of my jobs is to say, can we find a place for this person in the world? Is there.
Right.
Right.
hey, I just heard, they're hiring custodial workers at a local school, after school janitorial work, cleaning up stuff, which doesn't really pay that bad. So, you're not around people. You get to do what you're doing. You're not medically hurt.
Yeah.
And so it's a real.
So do you have to figure out what they could do? As long
yeah, I have to figure out.
In addition to figuring out if they can.
It's pretty simple. I have to figure out based on intelligence and memory functioning and psychiatric disorders if they can perform an SRT 8 hours a day. Simple repetitive task.
Whether or not that task is even available, that has nothing to do with it. It's just a matter
And that's what really drives me nuts.
Yeah.
Because
that's kind of tricky. You're like an employment agency
But I don't, that's like not part of my job, but I try to make that happen.
Right.
I recommend a lot of people to voc rehab, try this or whatever. The threshold for qualifying, usually about 1 out of 3 people eventually end up making it. But the idea is it isn't just, here's a beautiful example is an attorney who has a whatever traumatic brain injury, their IQ gets knocked down from 50 to 40. No, I'm kidding. I'm sure they're good attorneys. I just haven't met any. But anyway, there are good ones. But let's say somebody's got an IQ of 120. They get smacked somehow.
Yeah.
They have an incident occur. They're back down to average 100. Okay. Because, or let's go down lower. Let's say maybe 80, which is below average but not significantly impaired. So they could easily do an SRT. Maybe they can't do their complex and detailed tasks that they were doing.
Right.
But they absolutely. So that's when we get into a really bind where you got a really educated, smart person who's now functioning a little bit below average but not impaired. And you could say, whoa, you need to rethink things here and go into, you know, go do something else. So that's kind of hard to hear, you know, the person.
Well, because I ran into a girl, I think I told you this on the phone. I had run into a girl who was 17, 18. She had just graduated from high school, and she was on Social Security disability because she had ADD or
ADHD.
I'm sorry, I don't know the difference between the two. What is the difference between the two? One, you're kind of hyper. And
yeah, ADHD has subcategories primarily of inattentive, hyperactive, and combined types.
Okay. So if you're ADD, you're just sort of hyper?
ADD is more probably, it's the inattentive type.
Okay.
You may not be hyper with that.
Oh, okay.
But the point is that's so correctable, you know.
So why would a kid who's 18 wind up on basically long-term disability because of that? Just
it would have to prove to be treatment resistant.
Okay.
They'd have to try methylphenidate, which is Ritalin, Adderall, Concerta.
So do you wind
others.
Up doing that? So someone comes in and you find out what they're doing, which may be like nothing.
Right.
And you say, okay, here, we got to go try this.
Right.
Or do you have to evaluate them right then, right there?
Oh, the most problematical
yes
evaluations
or no.
are the parents who bring kids in deliberately off of their ADHD med to show me how bad they really are.
Well, that's helpful.
It's like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
What on earth? You got something that's helping the child function normally.
Yeah.
You know, at a regular school day, which is what we're assessing, to qualify for it. So
this kid said like her mom's on disability and mm-hmm. it was a generational deal.
That happens. Yep, that happens sometimes. And when you ask somebody I had a guy the other day, I think 23, not really anything wrong, a little below average intelligence, no memory problems, learn things fast. So when do you plan on getting to work? I don't. Well, do you ever plan on working? Not really. Well, what are you going to do? I just want to stay on disability.
Yeah, no ambition, no.
No. And I think the person in that case was kind of raised that way. And then you have the other case where the guy's worked all his life or the lady's worked all her life and they come in, they can barely walk, they've had a stroke.
Sure.
Or a motorcycle accident or an auto accident.
And I think everybody would totally understand
yeah,
that.
Yeah, you totally
the
understand.
The first one, though, people mm-hmm. don't, I mean, people are frustrated with.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just, society at large, I should say, is mm-hmm. just frustrated with.
But what about the folks that, you know, work their whole life and then they're just tired? They just don't want to work anymore, you know? They just want to stay home.
Yeah, that can, not I happening. Mean. That's your dog's job.
I can clean.
yeah.
I mean.
That's what dogs do.
Well, there's a
yeah, Bill's off work there for a little while last year, though.
Yeah.
And, you know, first, I think it was like the first.
You drove the dog crazy.
Oh, my mm-hmm. gosh. It was the first couple of days I came home. Were there 7 loaves of bread on the counter? He found the bread machine.
Oh, whoa.
Out of that was packed in the garage.
Stay
he unpacked.
Busy.
I'm like, what are we opening a homeless shelter? What's going on here? Yeah, Bill had to go back to work. He was baking us out of house and home. He was going to turn everybody into a giant muffin.
But people
bad.
Can get. People, if they feel like they are injured or damaged to the point that they can't work for a year, be it psychiatrically, intellectually, memory-wise, or physically, they should apply. You know,
yeah.
They should apply for disability.
And that's done through Social Security.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then the medical doctors do the internal medicine evals. Then I do a lot. If I don't do all. There are a couple other guys doing them, too, but I've done over 25,000. So good chance you'd see me if you apply for that. And my take, honestly, is I really think of myself as a compassionate person. I'm pretending this person is somebody I know and care about or a family member or something like that.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And I go in with it like, I'm going to do all I can to help your case. And if you prove me wrong by faking or lying, which happens.
I'm sure.
You know, or coming in with a blatantly kind of, I don't like people. I don't want to work because I don't like people. What? Okay. Sometimes I don't like people either. And I can name a few people I really don't like, but that doesn't keep me from working.
You
know?
It doesn't get you on disability.
yeah. But there are people, I mean, it's really kind of interesting.
Thus far, it's not disabling.
I used to think of this as kind of like really, really mundane stuff. You know, it's like, wow, you do these when you're not seeing other people. And then I realized, wait a minute, there are people that absolutely
I was going to say it's really, it's really important.
Yeah. There are other people that absolutely shouldn't. Then there's about a third of the people in the middle that could probably go either way. And a lot of what I do is try to provide hope for people. Like part of the thing that I do when we're done is just say, you know, lady's crying, her kid's got ADHD, he's almost running out in Cypress Avenue. We have to hold him, drag him into the car. literally horribly bad. It's like, please ask your pediatrician about a trial of one of the ADHD meds like Adderall. And then I got a call back saying, oh, my God, thank you. You know,
it worked.
It's a huge difference. Yeah.
Jeez, just, that's awesome.
Yeah, so when you can do stuff, and that's not what I get paid for. That's not right. My job. It's because you want to make the world, you know.
It's a side benefit.
Out. Yeah. It's what's,
for you and them.
Absolutely.
We'll be right back with Dr. Sid. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. The crazy train. So, you know, some people in your line of work probably get pushed about that, huh? They don't like to talk about the word, the C word.
My dad.
Not that C word.
Did you hear this about what my dad said when I got my PhD?
You did tell me, but I totally forgot.
Yeah, same with my dad, right.
He's like, you're going to deal with crazy people
time? He's a great guy. He goes, I'm about to get my PhD from New York in record time. And he's a sales manager, district regional manager for a coffee company. And he's down-to-earth practical guy. And he goes, son, I just want you to know we're really proud of you. I think it's great that you want to make your living working with crazy people. And he said it with a straight face. He said, I know crazy people need people to work with, son. I'm very proud of you. I'm going, Dad, no, it's not like that.
We don't call them that. We don't use the cray-cray word.
There's a joke in psychology that I'm not spreading this, but the joke is the psychologists work with the people with problems. The psychiatrists work with. That was our joke in psychology, and I didn't make it up. Yeah. I've said it.
Well, but, oftentimes they are in that field because they need
a lot,
the help.
A lot. But a lot of what we do, really, a lot of what we do is really a lot more life management stuff. We call it CBT, cognitive behavior therapy. What you're thinking and what you're doing, what you're not thinking and not doing, determines a huge extent of your life.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
sure, because you know you talk to people all the time. I've got several conversations. Okay, mm-hmm. Metaphorically running through the back of my mind. And I'm thinking, you know, here are people who have, they start telling you all this stuff, right? Mm-hmm. And the whole time I'm listening, I'm thinking, okay, mm-hmm. Stop doing that. Get over here and do this. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I'm looking at how to fix it. And mm-hmm. For some reason, there are a lot of people who don't seem to be able to order those things for themselves.
Yeah.
And they share a lot.
Yep.
They love to share, which makes people like me
mm-hmm.
lose it. I finally have learned, like, just listen, right? Don't. They're not really telling. See, I used to think, I used to actually believe that they were telling me this because they wanted to fix it.
Right.
And so I'm like, all right, focus with me here. Mm-hmm. You know, we're going to get the ball down the field. We're going to kick it through the uprights.
Right, right.
We've got a plan. And they didn't want a plan.
No.
They just wanted it to be broken and wanted somehow you to go on the ride.
Yeah.
Is that what you do during the day? Do you go on the ride?
It's really...
That would just...
It's real... For me, it's like really very, very clear-cut stuff. It's called operational behaviors. Do you have a job? Are you doing something you're okay at and okay doing and are you comfortable with it? Number two, do you have a how's our things with your family? Number three, how are your friends' relationships with your friends and social life, hobbies and recreations, what you got going on that? So if you look at during your waking consciousness, what are you doing and what's happening? There's huge room for variation that's way normal. You know, it really,
Yeah, it is normal. That's true.
It is.
Yeah, you can, you know. I mean,
so what about, I know, I mean, we've always been big fans of, you know, who you hang around with is who
that's
you become.
Important. Yeah.
And that, do you run into that a lot where people come in with all these problems and a lot of it is just related around the crowd?
I've had friends. That point, I wrote a chapter in Life God called Situational Engineering. And that's hugely important, and it really came up in the drug and alcohol population.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
I just moved here from Denver to get away from the people doing meth, or I just got out of here to get away from heroin, or I divorced my husband because he's a dealer, and we're way into that. So, yeah, there's a tremendous situational component to it, and that's probably one of the biggest drivers. I mean, you do have closet alcoholics and meth heads and heroin users that do it on their own, and not that many people might know, but a really powerful predictor is you tend to do the behaviors, your peer group, that you have your audience in your mind of who, you know, who's important to you,
mm-hmm.
and you tend to some extent shape your behavior to that group.
Oh, I see it with, I mean, I have a couple of people I work with that they come in with these bizarre stories of woe.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole time I'm hearing this, and a lot of times they're not telling me, I'm just overhearing the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, do you not see that these people are probably not people you need to hang around with? And all this crap would go out of your life.
Right.
But they don't seem to be able to put that together.
You know what's fascinating is it's a similar problem to an abused wife or girlfriend mm-hmm. staying with the same guy. There's a familiarity of the miserable. You know what you can predict what's going to happen. It's miserable, but at least you know what's going to happen.
You're miserable?
Yeah, you're miserable, but you can predict it.
Right. And it's my miserable, so I'm going to keep it.
Some people have a terror of abandonment or being alone. People that are dependent, it's like, I got somebody who's a jerk, but at least I have somebody.
Right.
So you tend, people fall into that trap too, and it's a tough one to get out of. Yeah.
Tell me this. So from a, you know, outside looking in, right, you have somebody telling you all this stuff. And obviously, you know, if they would benefit from a mental health professional, I mean, it's obviously fairly easy to suggest that. But is it better to just listen and say nothing?
You can. If you listen and say nothing, the person is going to clear their mind and get out what they want to get out. Or they could be misleading you. But there's a whole type of therapy based on listening and reflecting back what they're saying called Rogerian therapy or client-centered. Carl Rogers created that in the 50s, and it does have benefits because you're validating what people say and you're getting their feelings out, and the idea is eventually they'll get to a point
they'll
where
they'll process it and be done with it.
I realize what I said earlier was BS. You know, here's why I said. So if you just reflect back, you can get there, you can get benefits sometimes, but the whole CDP movement, cognitive behavior therapy, is based around what are you thinking or not thinking and what are you doing or not doing. So, you know, if you're not thinking thoughts that are damaging to you, like you're worthless, no good, you'll never have a job. You know, if you're thinking productive thoughts like, a guy I just got right now, instead of obsessing about losing the job he had, which was very unfair case, it's like, I wonder if I'm going to work in Bermuda, Hawaii, Alaska, or Canada, or here. So, you know, what you're thinking and then what you're doing. Are you putting applications out or are you just sitting there, you know, looking at TV type thing?
The power of positive thinking. I mean, how many millions of those books are sold?
And then if you throw into that the power of positive acting,
mm-hmm.
I mean, if you put stuff together like that, it if you think about it, if you're a product of what you think and don't think and what you do and don't do, you can really have it made really easy. If you're thinking at worst neutral thoughts and at worst doing behaviors that aren't damaging, you're at least okay. And then when you get them going in the positive direction, you know, it can turn it around. And that's not a medication.
No.
That's what's going on in your head.
No, that's stuff you control.
Yeah, 2x2 matrix, yeah.
So, okay, when we come back, I do want to ask you, though, about these people that go bananas, like the guy in Las Vegas that now they've decided has some mental illness because they can't figure anything else out. So what about all that? Do we have more of those people? Do they just act out more? Do they feel – and how do we spot them? Because, frankly, just from my not psychiatrist point of view, I don't think we do. I think sometimes just people blow a fuse.
Yeah, we're not yet. I think we could. We have to start really early.
All right, we're going to find out what we're looking for. We'll be right back. You're listening to We the People. Bob's got a – what is it, Bob? What does that grin mean?
This is a subject he knows nothing about. By his own admission.
No, it was the other subject. It was the one that Bill picked.
Shiver, and Jimmy always viewed it with concern. But I'd rather have cirrhosis of the liver than an intellect that's second to a fern. I wonder if old Jimmy's gonna hear it when I tell him that his logic wasn't sound. They'll dose him up on lots of evil spirits when they take him to the psychiatric grounds. Yes, me, I've got a bottle in front of me, and Jimmy has a frontal lobotomy. Just different ways to kill the pain the same. But I'd rather have a bottle in front of me than have to have a frontal lobotomy. I might be drunk, but at least I'm not insane.
Is that the ultimate country song or what?
That is the ultimate song.
Man.
I don't care what genre. Who was that?
Believe it or not, is a licensed MD.
Of course it was.
Randy Hanslick.
You have to send me that. I'll post it on on the page.
Practices in Georgia these days.
Because the video was actually worth its weight in gold. We could see
yes,
that over.
It was.
Yeah.
That's called I'd Rather Have a Bottle in Front of Me Than a Frontal Lobotomy.
I didn't know they actually wrote a song about it. That was something that the Irish just joked about. Who knew? All right. So now that we've determined drinking is good, drugs are fine in moderation. As long as they're being supervised appropriately, and you're not hurting anyone or yourself. Honestly, are people getting nuttier? Does it feel nuttier to you?
Is it
just us? Because it feels nuttier to us.
I've done over 20. I think I can say I've done more full scale IQ tests than anybody I've ever heard of.
Is it going down?
I've done over 25,000, and absolutely yes.
It is, isn't it?
I knew we were in trouble.
It's like Idiocracy.
Remember the pipeline oil deal in the Gulf ruptured?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it spilled oil for, what, 2 or 3 months?
Yeah.
Right. It's like, I could have thought of something. Why didn't somebody think of something? And Obama goes, it's above my pay grade. I don't know what to do. It's like, well, somebody think of something, for God's sakes. When you made it, did you ever have a plan of what are you going to do if it gets out of control and breaks? And I started thinking, people are not getting smarter. And then one cool
That's a good
part,
example, actually.
Remember the people in the Chilean mine that got trapped?
Yep.
Yeah. And they created that thing to get them out?
Right.
That was giving me some hope there. But other than that, holy cow, I don't know if people are dependent on other people being smart or what, but I'm sure there are smart people in the world.
If you don't use it, you lose it. That's what they say.
And they're very smart people in the world, but they really have to step up. They really do.
And this total dependence on the nightly news for your
fix,
that's got to stop, because these people read what's on the page. They're about as dumb as anybody. I really feel like we're living in the idiocracy stages right now.
That movie was about the guy who went into hibernation or whatever for 500 years.
Because he was stupid.
He was an average guy.
Yeah.
A perfectly average IQ. He wakes up 500 years later,
and he's
the smartest man on the planet
by
far.
Yeah.
My favorite scene is like every meeting I attend where they talk about the Brondo. What does, Brondo's got
Brondo has what plants crave.
Brondo's got what plants crave, right? It's got electrolytes. And then he says, well, what are electrolytes? It's what plants crave. Well, how do you know that? Because it's in Brondo. And it just goes around and around. I'm like, oh, my God, I go to that meeting all the time. Is that bad? But it does feel like people are spinning out of control.
People have to, you got to step up and solve problems that are going on. And
what's some simple stuff people can do?
Probably not have as many kids unless you're in a spot to
do so. Stop breeding.
Exactly. Unless you're in a spot to do so and can raise your kids and not damage them. Yeah.
Yeah, that's true, because, you do see.
We reach
that was the whole premise behind Idiocracy.
I know. It was the overbreeding. It's true. We
reached a point. There's a
it was prophecy. It wasn't actually a funny movie. It was prophecy.
But there was a population control thing that I read up on it, and I think it was, what are we in November? It was last spring that we reached a point of negative tolerance for earth resources and people. In other words, at the rate when we got to that point, staying there, we would deplete everything and not survive. And the population is still going up. The China experiment, where they're going to let everybody have one kid, that didn't work.
No, didn't work.
And it's not going to work because people have an innate proclivity to want to reproduce. And,
I think they just like to practice. I think they like to practice more than anything. But well, tell me this though: stepping away from some of the electronic imaginary, what about this online dating? God, we only have a minute left. Oh, we have less than a minute. We have 30 seconds.
Something profound. Think of something quick. Somebody.
Okay, so the online dating and stuff like that. I mean, all that is before, kind of like before my time.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a weird place we've gotten to. We don't do a lot of interpersonal stuff anymore.
It's a fishing line in the ocean behind a trawler versus a giant one-mile net.
Right.
That's how many people you can reach compared to finding somebody walking through your
daily
life.
I get the net.
So it's a pretty pretty broad thing, and a lot of people have a lot in common, and I think there are many, many, many people that can find many, many, many other people that could get along just great.
Mentally healthier to hang out with real people or electronic people?
No, real people. No, they're people.
Real people are really
similar in a lot of ways. They really are.
Nice.
Everybody's
have to do this again because
this was
super fun.
Yeah, we're definitely going to have to have you back.
Cool. I enjoyed the heck
out of it. We'll have an outline next time.
No, we won't. That'll ruin everything. That'll ruin everything.
No, we got a lot to talk about.
Brush up on your what happens when you talk in your sleep. We want to know what that's about.
I have no idea. It's not my forte.
All right, you've been listening to We the People. We've been goofing off today, but it's been fun, and we hope you enjoyed it. We'll be back next week with something serious, and preferably not dire.
Right here on KCNR Shasta Red.